Well, it looks like Iowa Representative Steve King, I guess he stepped a little too deep into it this time around, as they have stripped him of all of his committee positions. Sorry, Steve. I guess you're just going to be showing up to work. And it's one of these things where you go, it's kind of about damn time. Just kind of a thought. You know, it's about time that a guy who has had so many moments, and I think one of my favorite, was the Cantaloupe Cavs comment. He said, for every when they were arguing the DACA thing, he said for every valedictorian, there's another 100 out there who weigh like 130 pounds who have calves the size of cantaloupes because they're carrying 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert. And you go, really? These folks could barely carry themselves. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on that. Also, the shutdown. Donald Trump can relate. I've asked our good friend, Propane Jane, to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So, white nationalist, white supremacist, whatever, Steve King, looks like he's getting slapped on the hand.
Yeah, like you said, it's about time.
Do you have a favorite King comment?
No. Not at all. But you know what, though? As vile as it sounds, I appreciate his honesty and his lack of filter, because I think he is actually saying what so many of the members of the Republican Party, elected officials all the way down to just the base of the party voters, who actually feel this way and believe it wholeheartedly. And I think that, you know, even though he's a stain on the whole Congress, I think he also is very representative of the dirty little secret that the Republican Party wants to act like it hasn't, had for the last 50 years.
Yeah, I think of my buddy Munch from, a guy I haven't seen him in a number of years. We worked together for years. He grew up in Georgia, he's like 20 years older than me. So it had been like the late 50s, early 60s. And, he told me at the time he would prefer people to, walk up to him and call him the N-word as opposed to smile at him. And he said, look, all these guys who smile at me now, think about the stuff that they say about my back. And I said, really, you'd rather have that than at least people being somewhat nice to you? And he's like, yeah, I want to know who you are.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, MLK said the same thing when he was traveling through the North. He said, hey, back home, people are honest about it. Up here, they're hiding it. They're smiling in your face, and then behind your back, they're doing worse, actually. And I think that has become just a facet of our politics to the degree that it's so insidious that nobody even notices that it's happening. And then which makes somebody like Steve King, really shock your consciousness because he's saying all of this out loud. But ultimately, this is the sentiment that drives Republican voters to the polls. This is what makes them go out and vote for somebody who says they're going to build a wall because Mexicans are rapists. That cantaloupe statement, I mean, these are the same ideas that Donald Trump himself espouses from the presidential podium at his rallies every time he does them. So I don't think that Steve King is by any means alone in that sentiment. He's the only one that's willing to say it out loud, and I'm glad that he's facing consequences for it. But this is happening because the Democrats are in power. He's been there like how long at this point? And he's been saying all of this racist stuff for the last 2 years while the Republicans were in control, and they did absolutely nothing about him.
Oh, no, he's been saying this stuff for at least a decade.
Exactly. I mean, this is who this man is, and they continue to put money into his campaign. They continue to help him get elected. They don't care. They feel like, hey, this is what the voters of Iowa want in that district, and he keeps going back. And so, I mean...
Yeah, it's crazy. I think one of the craziest
representative democracy.
Yeah, I think one of the craziest things that I ever saw him do is evidently he went on a trip sponsored by this Holocaust Memorial Group, and he met with a group of Nazis. And you know, you go, wait a second, how do you do that? How do you take the money of someone who's you know, talking about the horrors of the Holocaust and then meet with the Nazis?
Because they don't care. He has an R after his name.
Yeah, it's crazy. just crazy. But I just thought I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
If you thought it was enough. Is it enough that they strip him of any committee appointments? I mean, now he's just going to sit around and make more racist comments.
Exactly. I mean, he's a nuisance. We won't be rid of him until the voters send him home.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully that, you know, every election I keep hoping that happens, and it never does.
Right.
What is it about Iowa? They're living up to the Iowa name. You know, I have a friend who's from Iowa. He says, idiots out walking around. That's how he remembers how to spell it. I'm going, okay, thanks for that. Wow. Anyway, day 24 of the shutdown. Thoughts?
Yes. It's a disaster. Trump is a disaster. Trump is instability in chief. Instability will abound as long as he is there.
Yeah. Texas want the wall?
No. Nobody wants this damn racist wall. But Trump.
Well, you know, there's a third of the population who does.
Well, but if he woke up tomorrow and said, I'm over it, Mexico's not paying for it, moving on to something else, that third would rally right behind him just as they were the day before.
Point well taken. the idiot base. I got it.
Yeah, I mean, they aren't fixated on the concept of the wall itself because it's completely idiotic. And it's futile, and it's not going to solve any problems.
So you're arguing that he could just dangle another bumper sticker slogan out in front of them, and they would magically forget about build the wall.
He could come out and wage another culture war against another group, and they would latch on to that just as they did the wall. That would be no problem for him. But for him, the bigger issue is he said he wanted something, and he wants it to be given to him. I mean, yeah. He is that toddler that's sitting on the floor that wants whatever toy or snack or whatever that his parents won't give, you know, him or her, and is just going flat out apeshit. This is what Trump is doing.
Yeah. Do you think it's simply that, or do you think it's? I've had some people say it's even more in depth than just, you know, the tantrum. You know, he's really worried about Mueller, and this is a way of slowing down the investigation.
Oh, for sure.
This is a way of stopping the resources from investigating him. You know, we found out on Friday that the FBI began an investigation, you know, a couple months after he took office. You know, there's all of this stuff. And also, look, the Republican wet dream has always been destroy government. And this plays into it.
Yeah, it's a twofer. It's a twofer. And yes, I mean, Trump is, I think, simplistic enough to think on its face, you know, this is an investigation that's being run by government entities. So, of course, if the government's not funded, then they can't continue to do this work. I mean, yes, he possibly is thinking that. But at the end of the day, this is a man who is completely exasperated. And what do you do when you throw a tantrum? I mean, ultimately, you end up on the floor, arms and legs completely splayed out, completely vulnerable, just obstinate. You're just standing there going, I won't budge. I'm not standing up. I'm not rolling over. I'm just in this place, I'm static. And that's what he's doing. He's just sitting there static, not moving anything forward, not attempting to work with, you know, they're having these meetings or whatever, but ultimately he's just going in there with his own point of view. And if people don't agree with him, what does he do? He storms out of the room.
Yeah, slams his fist, says bye-bye. Because, you know, the little thing with Speaker Pelosi and Senator Schumer the next day after his little whatever that was.
Tantrum.
And again, I still love Anna Navarro's comment. I want my 9 minutes back. But, you know, he really thought that, you know, that speech was inspirational enough that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer would walk in and bow down and whatever you want, Sir Donald. And he, like you said, he had his tantrum when they said no.
This is a man who is accustomed for over 70 years of his life to throwing a fit and people bowing down to him and giving him what he wants and what he demands. This is what happens in his romantic relationships, if you can call them that. He forces, he takes what he wants. He tries to impress upon that person that that's ultimately what they want, but he's really just bullying and manipulating people. And it's an abuser mentality. And so, you know, I think it was Time put out a story within the last week of, you know, this is a pattern that he's demonstrated in the business world where he makes deals by standing up and storming out of the room. I mean, that's a piece of his strategy because it is so aggressive and hostile, yep. and it's something that people typically just don't do.
No, you're right. And I have an acquaintance, a guy I've known for a number of years. I don't know if you remember the USFL. Trump owned a USFL team,
mm-hmm.
and he was one of the union's negotiators, this friend of mine. And he said, you know, we would sit for hours and have these meetings with the owners. And Trump would do just that. He would walk in and he would blow the whole thing up. And he said the great thing about having Trump do that is we ended up getting really great stuff out of the owners because they didn't want to deal with that anymore. He was such a disruptive force mm-hmm. that the players actually got a lot more than the owners really wanted to give just because Trump would just booger everything up. And I guess it's highlighted by the fact that understand, he was a horrible businessman. I mean, what was the thing? Had he just put his money into something like an annuity or something? He would have made more money.
Right. But, I mean, you can ask any psychologist, any psychiatrist, anyone who is a licensed clinical therapist that when you're running a group or a psychiatric unit and you have a really severely narcissistic or antisocial person in the group, that person changes the dynamic of the entire place, you know, and that person, when you get somebody like that on your unit, yes, you want to help them, but they become so toxic to the environment itself that after a couple of days, everybody's like, okay, we got to get this person out of here somehow. I mean, they even do that amongst clinical professionals. They have that effect on even clinical professionals who are trained to deal with this. That it just becomes exasperating on your end, perceiving it, and ultimately you just give up and you give in. And I think what he's hoping for in this situation, that the pain and suffering will become so immense after 24 or 30 or however many days. I mean, he said this could be months or years.
Right. And this is one of those moments where Mitch McConnell has to step in. But understand,
exactly.
McConnell wants as much destruction as anybody else. McConnell in all of this is, you know, the guy behind the curtain who, you know, has caused a lot of these problems. There are people saying, well, you need to blame McConnell. Well, no, McConnell's been doing this stuff for decades now. This is not new. This is Mitch McConnell's plan all along.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is what I was saying last week, in that ultimately, you know, Trump is always going to throw this tantrum. And, you know, when we're thinking about him as the president of the United States, we have to think about what means we have at our disposal to deal with that, because it isn't a psychiatric unit, right? It's not a group therapy session. I mean, this is a government. And what the Constitution lays out is there are three co-equal branches of government. And the other two have to lean in and hold this one individual accountable for running roughshod over the whole process. And so you have Mitch McConnell there in control of the Senate. And yes, he's been doing this for years. I mean, this is the reason why Merrick Garland isn't on the Supreme Court right now.
Right. So how do you, again, you know, I look at this and it's another one of these moments where, you know, we've been talking about this stuff from the beginning. I mean, you go back to Inauguration Day. You know, we had these conversations that, you know, what we saw during the 2016 election was treasonous. What we saw was, you know, too much, you know, all this stuff with Russia.
Right.
Mitch McConnell and the Republicans have been doing this stuff for decades. None of this stuff is new. It's just now the suffering is being more widespread.
Yeah.
I mean, when do we wake up and take to the streets? When do we get out the pitchforks, Jane?
I mean, it feels like it's always been an opportune moment to do that, right? I mean, it's hard to say, you know, what has to actually happen to really, you know, tip that off in this society. But I think a lot of the problem is that there really isn't a muscle memory for it.
Yeah.
And certainly not for it to be going on, like, broadly across society rather than in these, you know, small pockets of marginalized groups like Black Lives Matter or the LGBTQ community or even the Women's March, even though women are, you know, greater than 50% of our population. Those still, you know, sort of, I think, ended up being like niche movements. And so you do wonder, like, when are we going to see what we see happening overseas, you know, where there's just people all out in the streets from every demographic, basically because the society itself has broken down. And people are alarmed by it, but I think we don't necessarily recognize it. It's kind of like that, you know, story they tell about the frog slowly being boiled in the pot, right? Yeah. You know, you put him in there, and the water's fine, and he doesn't really notice that it's heating up gradually over time until it's too late and he's dead. And so I think that this is one of those instances where people just aren't awake yet, unfortunately. Even though I don't want to say that, I feel like we've been screaming at them to wake them up, but it hasn't gotten through.
And, you know, like I said, I've been saying this for years. I mean, you know, all the shutdowns during the Obama years, it was you know, Boehner, and it was McConnell. It was Republican-led. And every time, you know, I kept saying, look, this is the goal. The goal is so that government doesn't reopen, so that they can privatize and profitize all of the operations of government. And, oh, by the way, you know, any of that oversight, any of that accountability out the window. Corporate America now runs the show, and we're at their behest. And the big moneyed interests, they control things. And all of this talk about Russia, you know, look, you're talking about the money, the oligarchs. You know, I had someone just recently tell me, well, you know, do you really believe that Trump and Putin sat down and hatched this plan? And I said, no, I don't think so. I think it's even worse than that. I think it's they've been doing business together for decades, and they're so intertwined, and their interests are so intertwined that they're not our interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, another piece of this puzzle is that the media itself has really engaged in, like, both-sidism so much and false equivalence so much. That it really is hard, I think, for the average person who isn't just, you know, culling through all of this information day by day by day, like those of us who are like politics junkies do. I think that a lot of that gets missed when the media does that. But this is a very interesting moment because as all the polls are continuing to show, public opinion has really solidified behind this is Donald Trump's fault.
Right.
And if it's not entirely his fault, it's also the Republican Party's fault.
Yep.
And yes, Democrats are getting some blame, but that 30% is obviously Republicans saying that. The majority of the country, the middle of the country, is rightfully pinning the blame on Trump and the Republican Party. And so I think even though it is a really tumultuous, scary time, I do think that people recognize what's going on, and they see who's causing all of the problems because Trump is such a corrupt criminal figure in his own right. And his brand has been lumped on to the Republican Party in people's minds. I think that's a good thing.
No, I think so too. But, you know, at the end of it, you know, Trump is the lightning rod. He's taking all of the attention. And we do. I think we forget that you've got all of these Republicans whom, because I always people give me a hard time. Well, you know, the Democrats aren't perfect, and I agree. The Democrats are nowhere near perfect. But the Republicans at this moment, if you're not talking, if you're not speaking out against this guy at this moment, you're just as bad as he is. You're just as treasonous. You're just as much of a criminal as he is, in my view.
Absolutely. And you look complicit. You look complicit in whatever ultimately comes out in the end because you didn't do anything to stop it. And actually, you enabled it. So the longer that they continue to, you know, hide in the corners and, you know, leak these anonymous stories to the press of how worried they are and they really hope that Trump will finally come to his senses and help them out, they will not be spared at the voting booth. They just won't, because people will remember this terrible moment and their inaction.
Oh, boy, I sure hope you're right. Because, you know, I used to believe that. I used to believe that you know, people will remember bad things. But, you know, I got to think that, you know, they're putting, instead of fluoride in the water, we've got some kind of an amnesia that makes us forget. Because, you know, I ask people about the shutdowns of the past. And they're, oh, well, those are Obama's shutdowns. No, they weren't. Those are Boehner's shutdown. You remember the, you know, during the Clinton years? Yeah, Clinton shut the government down. No, Gingrich did. And you go, how can you not remember that?
Yeah, but you know what I think is again, what is unique about this moment is that, yes, you have all of this shutdown. And I think definitely with the shutdowns during the Obama administration, a lot of it just kind of became a wash because ultimately the economy was roaring back from a recession. And obviously it was the Obama recovery that still is like, we're still running on some of those fumes even right now. But the problem for Trump, I think, and the Republican Party is that not only are they doing the shutdown, they're doing it on the heels of their tax scam. And so as all of the economists are rightfully recognizing, we're in for some really significant trouble in terms of the economy.
Yeah, no, you're right.
The trade war, I mean, it's going to be disastrous for people. And so it's not just the memory. It's the fact that there is going to be actual pain and suffering that people attach to this moment and this presidency.
I hope you're right, because here's the thing. I know I make no more of these predictions, because after the collapse of 2008, I thought a Republican president and a Republican Congress would not be seen again in my lifetime. I thought the pain and the suffering and the people losing their homes and the people losing their jobs and all of the people who had 401ks that turned into 200.5s, I thought they would remember. And you're talking just 8 short years later, you've got, you know, the Republican trifecta winning the White House, the Senate, and the House, and also packing the courts even more. And I'm going, how is it possible you forgot 2008 already?
Well, I mean, I think what we're seeing in terms of the science, in particular, you know, as a physician, what I can tell you is that the socioeconomic indicators like drug abuse, death rates, in particular with the opioid epidemic, in particular in rural areas amongst the white working class, it's not just the economy that's taking them out, it's opioids.
Right.
And it's a president and a Republican Party who aren't doing anything from a policy standpoint to help these people.
Well, they're going to build the wall.
Well,
the wall's going to stop that, except the opioids come from China. But don't worry about that.
Well, and at the end of the day, the people who are dying, who are taking these accidental fentanyl overdoses, continue to be middle-aged, mostly white people. And these are the people who vote for Republicans. And so this is a new crisis. This is a compounded crisis that we haven't necessarily seen up until this point, particularly for those communities in America. We certainly saw the crack epidemic and all of that in the 80s and 90s in black and Latino communities. But we are seeing something totally different with the white community, and it's completely being neglected and ignored by the Republican Party and Donald Trump that they sent to D.C. to do it to them.
So then could you make the argument that the Republican Party's not racist because they don't care about white people either? Just kind of throwing that out there. Because, look, when I was a kid growing up in the housing project in the 70s, I saw those guys coming back from Vietnam who had horrible heroin addiction problems. Mm-hmm. In fact, we found one guy in a big army green coat dead against the neighbor's house with a needle still in his arm. But, you know, back then they were just junkies. We didn't care about junkies. Now, as you're pointing out, these are middle-aged white suburban folk. You'd think we'd be, you know, moving mountains and, you know, changing the sea tides.
Right. But again, like you were talking about earlier, the oligarchy, the only color they care about is green.
Yep. I've said that my entire life.
Yeah.
I grew up mostly black. The other part was blue because I got beat up a lot. And, you know, I was just as poor as the black kid that lived next door to us. And the only thing that we were concerned about is we didn't have any green.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, again, it's the inability to understand that is why the Southern strategy works. It's why the culture war that the Republican Party wages all the time works. Because those individuals do see a difference between themselves and people who belong to other groups, whether it be, you know, their ethnicity, or their sexual orientation. They have learned to use that war to separate these people from their money, from their health care, from their, you know, just basic security in life. But they've done it in a way that has made it very unapparent to the people who are voting for it. And I think that they're going to wake up when it's way too late. And that moment is upon us. That's what the statistics show, unfortunately.
Well, it is most certainly crazy stuff. Let's finish up on what should we be doing? I mean, look, we can all be down. We can all, you know, be searching for the fentanyl. What do we do?
I hope not. I mean, what do? We have to, I think, continue to contact our representatives. because they still have a job they're supposed to be doing. They still need to hear from the American people.
And they're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're still getting paid our tax dollars to do nothing to help us. And so I do think we need to be vocal. I also think we do need to be in the streets. I do think protests should be organized. I do think we need to consider things like a national strike. We need to make ourselves aware of what tactics were used in the past, sit-ins, how did the civil rights movement work? You know, what does social movements have to do to get attention and to get traction for the things they want? We all need to be knowledgeable about those things. We need to understand that the media may not always be telling us all of the story. We need to be vigilant about the information that we're receiving because we know that we're under threat of a cyber attack and fake news. And we need to know when we're dealing with people who aren't going to listen to our message so that we can spend our time on people who will and mobilize people who can come out and make our voice larger.
That's a good point. But the sad reality is most of us are on the treadmill just trying to pay the rent tomorrow. And to me, that's what this shutdown at the end of it, if it does end, if we ever do reopen our government, what should come out of this is just how precarious working people's positions are. And how the struggle is almost universal among the working class, where people can't go a week without a paycheck or 2 weeks without a paycheck without having real crisis. And I think that's really what's got to come out of that as well. But Jane, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Always great talking to you. Thanks so much.
You too. Have a great week.
As always, our good friend Propane Jane. Love having her on. Always the same bit of voice. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back with our good friend Bob Nay, Talk Media News. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency accused Fiat Chrysler of installing secret software.
Fiat Chrysler to pay big fines for cheating on U.S. emissions tests. The three costliest weather disasters in the world last year all occurred.